Everybody, welcome back to another fantastically exciting and maddening episode of the Black Tower podcast. We are a Will of Time podcast. We're insane in the membrane, and we have no clue what we're doing, which is should be already abundantly obvious. But I am your recently newly tattooed or extra tattooed Bajan Mihail Andrew.
I am your soon to be tattooed sort of on Mihail because I'm getting a 4-hour block to work on my quarter, my three quarter tramp sleeve. My tramp stamp's coming later. It's going to be two dragons licking the wheel.
Yeah. It's going to say, like, you need the actual, like, infinity, like, snake, but, like, take out part of it and just put in only taint.
That's right. Only taints.
No, instead of, like, you know, the people that put in, like, live, laugh, love or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Treat their body like cheap home decor from
taint.
Bath and Body Works or whatever. Which actually isn't really that cheap.
I am the never been tattooed, but will at some point in my life.
Virgin skin.
Yes, I have the virgin skin. My first one will probably be on my taint, though. Let's be honest.
Yeah, I just bleach is getting this expensive, picture so... of Daniel. Okay, guys, go for it.
All right, guys. Yeah. All right, guys. I need an eye ring right over my ring.
Booty hole bleach is getting expensive, so I'm just going to get him to use an enormous amount of, like, just white ink.
It's going to be glow-in-the-dark ink. When I pull down my pants at night, it's just going to be...
Yeah, so then you just, like, bend over and, like, pitch darkness, and it's like, the beacons have been lit! Gondor calls for aid!
Where was Gondor when the fell?
When the foreskin fell?
That's what I said.
So this episode has started off great!
You ever wondered, what would it be like to listen to the Black Tower podcast? This is pretty much, it's just like this.
Speaking of foreskins,
that we don't have a guest tonight, and we're not making them wait through all of this. Anyway, hi guys.
Guys, so speaking of foreskin,
I can't segue off of foreskin. I tried. I can't do it.
Well, speaking of foreskin, something that you can do without giving up the tip of your member is you can go over to blacktowerpod.com to get all things tainty. Yeah, that's right. It's the opposite surface of the body. And you can get all the taint you want from blacktowerpod.com, including our Discord. That's close enough. Hey, on autopsy like diagrams, it's the opposite side. So
I mean you're not wrong. I get what you're saying. I'm picking up what you're putting down.
Yeah. But you can go to our website and you can find our Discord, our Patreon, our merch. You can find a running playlist of our 5 most recent YouTube and podcast episodes there. You can get everything you possibly want there. And if you're into the shiny click-clacks that may or may not have healing and restorative properties on the aura in and around your hold, you can check out our official sponsor, the Crystal Barista, Josh's better half. I don't know why there was like a pause there. I was like, I was trying to think of something more clever to say because I always say that, and I just had nothing.
You hesitated. Why did you hesitate? No, guys, these are high quality gifts. Christmas is coming. Christmas is around the corner, and if you want to find a handful of trinkets for the next time you are seeking shelter in a roof mistress hold, it's perfect thing to offer up. If or you want to get a gift for that special someone.
Or if your taint is getting extremely uncleansed and you need to cleanse it, leave it's some true. Crystals out in the it's moonlight true. For a little while and then just cleansed right up.
Right up there. Right up. Just put it right up in there.
Yep.
Don't do that. Actually,
no,
don't do that.
At the very least, make sure there's a string very, very well attached.
If you do that, you will be
at the very least. Make sure you have good insurance with low copays. If you do that,
yeah.
Or a very sturdy string.
After you have taken all the taint you can from our website, and you feel tainty and mad, well, you can go up to the Great Blight. Go to the Great Blight. TheBreakGlight.com.
Go to the what? Go to the Great
Blight. This is BreakGlight.com. Talk to Nablis and tell him I sent you.
No, we're not drunk yet. We're just all incredibly tired. I have been up since like midnight and then went to the gym and then worked.
This episode's already fucked.
Yeah.
So you go to thegreatblight.com. The Great Blight has some super amazing things. I've actually already referred a number of people who have not read the books to The Great Blight because they start looking up characters
and you're inadvertently
running across spoilers.
Hey, stop doing that unless you're doing it on Great Blight.
To Great Blight because Great Blight has character bios that are book specific that will go in progression of the book, so you do not have to get any spoilers.
Oh, we're gonna have to buy Great Glight now.
Great Glight. Give me the Great Glight. I'll have Adrian.
And after you're done with the Great Blight, make sure that you go over to AdamandEve.com and use the code Black Tower 21. They'll make sure that you get collared for a great price.
Jesus Christ. Oh. So, a couple exciting things happened here recently for us as we're recording this on the 14th of December. This previous Friday, which Friday should be something that you know very well, is whenever new episodes of the TV show come out the Wheel of Time TV show. The privilege and the honor of hosting the Twitter watch party. It was an incredible experience.
Phenomenal.
I said it in the pre-recording. I'm going to say it here again. If you're listening and you're like, oh, those guys were sassy to me on Twitter. If we were sassy to you, you deserved it. Get the fuck over it. Yeah. You'll be fine.
Especially the
favor and cry me a river and then build a bridge and get over
it. Don't cry me a river because then Russia will invade it.
Speaking of land invasions, tonight's topic...
Well, before we
is
because we going still have
to
be stuff.
Given to you after
stuff. After the other stuff that we need to do that keep forgetting to do.
Yes.
That
we but before we do that, to do. Talking about things that happened this past weekend as we're recording, what a holiday was a resounding success. The initial goal was $7,500 raised for the Lightweaver Foundation. Last I saw, it was at $10,700. It may be a little higher now. And we've already gotten word back, Malkia Rob has done an incredible amount, if not most of the work, along with Cheyenne from World Hoppers podcast. And then I was there, kind of. that's about the extent of my contributions. But it was an incredible time. It was a 24-hour charity live stream, just like we did last year, raising funds to help support the Lightweaver Foundation, which of course was founded by Brandon Sanderson and his wife, Emily. The point of contact there is actually his sister, Jen. And they're fantastic people. And the whole What a Holiday event actually got a shout out by Brandon in his weekly update before What a Holiday. So
it was a great time. It was a great show. It was a resounding success. Our hearts and our congratulations go out to Rob. Seriously, well done, sir. Well done. We're very happy for you, and we're very happy for the continued success, and we wish for the continued success of the What a Holiday event every holiday.
Yeah, we wish. And if you like things that start with what,
we wish you a What a Holiday. We wish you.
If you like things that start with what, in the show notes and description below is a link to WhatCon. Go and check it out. All the information is there. It's coming July 8th-10th. Of 2022 in Columbus, Ohio. We're going to be there. We hope to see you there. Now, we have had some new additions to the Black Tower.
That's true.
And you may have seen your names in the post-episode credits on YouTube, because they are there. However, we promised to shout you out in an episode, and we are actually going to do that this time. Because we keep getting too distracted by pre-show talk. And like literally like the last three episodes, I think at least one of us has said like, hey, we got to remember to do the Patreon shout outs.
It's been Andrew twice and me once.
Yeah.
Josh doesn't remember shit, but the rest of us.
So
I love you, Josh.
Coming in speak the as, true, a new, true. As a new addition to the family members, we have Black Tower Power. So
it was an actual Black Tower family member.
He is.
This is true. So welcome. Welcome to the family, Black Tower Power. At the rank of soldier, we have Daniela. Hopefully I'm saying that right.
It's just Danielle.
Is it just Danielle?
Yep. She was Gathering Madness in Ogden.
Not just Danielle, but it is Danielle. So thank you and congratulations on coming into the rank of soldier. We are bringing in a dedicated as well, Rachel. So thank you for coming to the Black Tower. Your name is thank on you, the
Rachel
rosters.
Sedai.
And,
you
know, Rachel Sedai. Yeah.
And Willkommen, where
we will find you an Ashaman Warder very soon. you can walk around and pick one, but you must ask for consent first.
Yeah. So wear the sword with pride, and we also have the addition of two new Ashamanses. So these folks get the sword and the dragon pins. We got to welcome he who comes with the wine. Thank you so much for your support of the Black Tower podcast and welcome to the Black Tower.
Welcome, Ashaman comes with the wine.
And also, Lisa, welcome to the rank of Ashaman. Welcome to the Black Tower. Thank you so much for your support. We cannot thank our patrons enough for your support. It's always incredible and always blows our mind just how supportive our patrons are. And how earnestly cool like all of you are.
Just to give you an idea,
like epic.
Yeah. Just to give you an idea, this show does not run at this capacity without Patreon support. We have reached a new tier of podcastership, of YouTubership, of whatever you want to call it, in which if tomorrow we lost all our patrons for whatever reason, the show would regress because there's no way that we could continue to run it at this level without patron support. So everything that we are, you guys are heavily invested in it, and we are tremendously grateful to you for that.
Yeah. And speaking of being incredibly grateful, at the time of recording, we are 24 subscribers away from 500 on YouTube. So if you're not subscribed to us on YouTube, please go ahead and do so. If you're watching this on YouTube, if you're not, you can get to our YouTube. Just go to YouTube and search Black Tower Podcast, or just go to youtube.com/Black Tower Podcast and please subscribe. The more subscribers we have, the more people get to enjoy this content along with you. If you're enjoying it, if you're not, and you're just barely tolerating us, then, you know, misery loves company. So bring somebody else.
I know, right? Hey, I'm just barely tolerating these guys too.
I don't tolerate you. That's why we only talk once a week.
Jokes on you. I'm barely tolerating me.
Oh! That took a left turn.
Did it, though?
Yeah. And then over on the Twitter front, we cannot say how shocked we are to be 85 followers away from 4,000. That is at least 3,998 more than I ever thought we would get when this thing started. So to everybody that follows us on Twitter, that subscribes to us on YouTube, that just tolerates our very existence. What, well, my tongue really just get in the way.
This is, it's going to be one of those.
But thank you all so much for your support. It definitely helps keep us motivated to keep making content. And if you have ideas on how we can do something differently or improve or whatever, then please definitely let us know. If you're not in our Discord, hop in our Discord. We have a whole channel dedicated just for Black Tower podcast feedback. Anything from topic ideas to topics you want us to readdress. We've had people say, hey, this other show covered this topic. It'd be great if you covered this topic as well. We want to hear your perspective on it. And we do read all of that and we work it in as early as we can. So, but you didn't come here to listen to us talk about ourselves for 25-ish minutes. We have an actual topic.
We didn't start to for like.
We got to go edit. We got to go edit and be 10. Like, if you don't want to hear the plugs, go ahead and fast forward.
We'll just make chapters on YouTube.
That's what I should do. Just put one like, I'm sick of hearing yourself promo bullshit. Where does this start? Just click here.
We can do that. Chapters. You can do chapters.
So, exactly where the spoiler warning starts.
Boom. So, for those of you that are listening live, our patrons, which you get for as little as a dollar a month. I don't know why I keep saying as little. As cheap as a dollar a month. Is that better?
You I feel say like as little better. As a dollar a month.
I start saying this stuff and I get so like because self-conscious of exactly what I'm saying and how like bad it may come off because somebody's going to take it negatively.
Actually, it's not as little. They say for as low as $1 a month. That is the phrase that is used. It's for as low as a dollar a month.
I mean, that's fair. I mean, I don't think cheap is bad because there's plenty of things that I can be very cheap on. There are other things I'm not.
Sure.
And the only reason I don't have the better stuff is because I am not spending that amount of money. Because I definitely want a new graphics card. I'm just not jiving with the current graphics card market right now. It's just not happening. Anyway, if you are in our Discord and you're one of our patrons, you've already seen where earlier today I put out a message that I hope you're wearing your armor for this episode because today we are talking about battles. Battles in the Wheel of Time and what makes these battles so interesting, so intriguing, so dynamic beyond just the common action sequences. And before we dive fully in to this full discussion, we got to make sure you're protected. So we're going to don some extra armor, a spoiler condom, if you would, you know, make sure that nobody gets spoiled. So here we go.
Welcome to the Black Tower, a Wheel of Time podcast. All right, let's check this one. This podcast will likely be spoiling books 1 through. Oh, what's this? An envelope addressed to me. No name, though. Let's see what's inside. Oh, my. This podcast will likely spoil all the books in the series, and apparently being a Patreon will expose you to information that should be left unseen. Protect yourself by pulling that spoiler condom all the way on. And I need a drink. That's way more of Andrew than I have ever wanted to see. Why would you breed it down there?
Oh, God.
It's manscaping. Get with it, okay? You've heard of vajazzling.
No, yeah, it's fashion, Karen. Look it up.
You ever listen to Christopher Titus?
Dolls the Balsling. I don't know.
The Balsling.
No.
Bedazzling.
So bedazzling. Ball dazzling. Ball dazzling.
Disco balling.
Disco balling.
Disco balling.
Hashtag disco balling. This is the quality content
it's
going to
change. It's going to change the like context of the question. Like, oh, he's a baller. Like he's got shiny stones on his balls. Like
disco
really?
Baller.
I feel like that's like counterintuitive, like in the current age, or is battles. It so niche now that it's cool again, which I don't know. I feel like
battles. It takes battles to be in a battle.
So here's a question.
Disco balls to be actually disco balls give you away in a battle. Don't do that.
Don't bring.
So here's a completely unfair question to ask you to count something that you haven't beforehand. Very quickly, Josh and Dano, do you know how many named battles there are in the Wheel of Time series? Named battles.
Named battles. I'm going to say.
I'll give you a hint. It is more than 15 and less than 40.
Oh, I was going to say 42. So let's go 32. Let's just cut the edge off.
I'm gonna $1 in. I'm gonna say 33.
Oh,
okay. If our unofficial or official fact checker
69.
If he wasn't driving, I would ask Morshadi if they.
He's actually not driving anymore.
He's not driving anymore.
Oh, Morshadi, do you know?
He doesn't.
Know. It's a completely unfair question. Without
he doesn't.
Oh, did I just miss everything?
No, he's posting in the wrong channel, like a madman.
Because I love him, but
oh, I was like, where is?
He might need some wine.
So if we were going by Price is Right rules, you would win, Josh, because you did dollar fuck Daniel.
$1, Bob.
The answer is 39.
39.
There are 39.
Shit. Why didn't you throw out 15? Fuck you. Such a low number too easy. For it to be 40. Like,
I saved you from 42, which you would have busted. So you at least
if I had said 42, I'm guessing he would have either said 41 or 43, and then we both would have busted, and it would have been fine. Because he would have dollared me. He would have dollar billed me.
So okay,
now this does include some
named battles.
Yes. And this does include some of the older battles that we don't actually see, as well as battles that we do see.
Oh, okay. That's fair. I was not actually thinking in my head about
it. So, for instance, the Battle of Dumai's Wells is a named battle within the book series.
The Battle of Tarmogoyen.
There's a battle where Matt, like, decimated a Shanchan patrol.
Mm.
Does not count in this number, correct? Because that's not a named battle.
Yeah, there are at least 100 actual skirmishes and battles in the books, but it does include things like them are unnamed.
Yeah, but it does include things like, you know, the Battle of the Shining Walls.
Yep, or the Battle of Manetherin. Or Manetherin's Last Stand is, I think, what it would be really called, but...
Yeah, I mean, there's a ton. So, like, 39 named battles, and that's there's still far more battles that we see in the series. It's just the named ones.
Just the ones that somebody was like, hey, we should name this shit.
Yeah.
How many named weapons are there in the series?
I don't know. I can think of... Kalendor and Justice.
It's hundreds of thousands. Everybody names their weapons. They just don't tell you what it is.
What about names that we see? Okay. Semantics. Anyway, we're going to talk about like what is it about so many of these battles that makes them so entrancing? I mean, so let's start with what may be the most obvious one near and dear to our hearts, giving our podcast namesake. And we did a whole podcast
Battle of the Shining Walls.
Yeah, that's the one. Andrew, get the wine.
We got a guy now, an Ashaman. He comes the wine.
Ashaman comes with the wine. Your duty. Wait,
if he comes with the wine, does that mean that like we bought wine and he came along with it? Or did he bring
it? No.
Bringing the wine, he's in trouble.
It means that if he doesn't have wine, then it doesn't matter. He ain't coming.
So he's got the opposite of whiskey dick.
He's got wine wiener.
Wine wiener. I love it.
Okay, so Dumai's
Wells. But yeah, you guys talk. I'm going to go get a drink.
We didn't take a break to go and do that, did we?
We didn't do that.
No, but that's okay. Yeah.
So,
yes, Siege of the Pillars of the Sky is one of those. But yes, Dumai's Wells, the only battle in the entire series that is described as a meat grinder.
Well, it's
the debut of Rand's backup dancers.
Yeah, it is. And that was nicely put.
Dalen.
That was nice. Grinder, you say?
Yes, this is why you should be a patron so you can be in the live chat.
Tie him on the battlefield looking at Shido. Swipe right on his ass. Boom, his head blows up. Swipe right. Boom, his head blows up. Dumai's Wells is an absolute, as you said, it's an absolute meat grinder, man. Like, it is just, the Shido are absolutely destroying everything. Gawain and the younglings go in there. Perrin and the forces of who was it with them?
With who?
Perrin was
with Perrin. With, did he have the winged guards with him?
The winged guards. That's right. And you had some. They went in against the Shido. Oh. But the thing is this was almost like a three-way battle. Mayan.
So he had He had two rivers, 302 riversmen, 500 Karianen, 200 wing guards, 200 Asamon, 9 Saladar Aes Sedai, 94 IL wise ones, and approximately 6,000 IL.
Well, that's
in 1,000 wolves.
That's the total number of. No, you're right. That's right. That's what he came with.
Yeah. So of the IL, 1,000 were Fardar Smai, and the remainder were Siswayamon, the Spears of the Dragon.
Which, by any other standard, okay, by any other standard, that's a winning hand. That's like when you're playing poker and you bust out with a straight flush and you're like, shit, yeah, I got this. I'm going to win. And the dealer busts out with a royal flush, because what you're doing is going up against the entire clan of the Shaido.
Which 40,000 Shaido IL.
That is
including
ultra fucking creepy, Daniel.
Yeah. It included 300 wise ones from the Jumai, from wise ones of the Jumai, yes. Shaido.
And the wise ones, and they were could channeling. All channel. They were, yeah, channeling all 300 against channel. Their foes. Sorry.
No, I was just saying, yeah, all 300 could channel. And that's in addition to. Fucking English.exe just broke down and stopped working for me.
So I can only giggle. They can channel and the task actively channeling at the non Shaido combatants, which in this case also included a handful of Aes Sedai who were holding Rand hostage.
39? Hey, look, and 39. So, the number showed up again.
Oh, it's going to be one of those.
And then another 582 younglings. So, like, people we can ignore, pretty much.
Basically.
Because they're led by Galwyn, so they're automatically ineffective.
Thank you.
Actually, the younglings are extremely effective at this point.
It's got every aspect of one of the great battles from Legend without jumping the shark, as it were. You've got
jumping the Shaido, what?
Jumping the shark. Are you not familiar that with that term?
I am not. I'm not familiar with that phrase.
Shit. Well, fuck.
I'm familiar with, like, jumping the bones.
I'm familiar with that.
Making me feel old again. No, jumping the shark.
I'm familiar with that. Shut your stupid face.
Jumping the shark is a term that came from the Happy Days TV show. And there was a scene in which he was water skiing or surfing, and he jumped over a shark, and it just ruined it. It just ruined it. It was like the suspension of disbelief was so far gone that people lost it. It was done. They hated it. No more. It was,
well, don't feel old. I remember Happy Days. I remember loving it. I
okay, just
don't
good.
Remember.
Okay. So when you jump the shark, you ruin it, and it's done, and people just can't. It's broken and people can't get back into it. What I love about Demise Wells is that it's got all of the heroic battle tropes without going too far. You've got the Shaido, who are evil for all intents and purposes. They are misguided. Attacking in what they feel misguided. That's a better way to say it. They are attacking in what they feel is an overwhelming advantage. They do have an overwhelming advantage. You've got Perrin and his forces that are like, and to quote,
to Andrew, be fair, they're actually not attacking at all. They are defending.
True.
At Dumai as well, so, the Shaido are being attacked. At Dumai as well, the Shaido.
Well, they start off attacking because Savannah is swayed to try to capture Rand as a bargaining chip. So they try, right. So they move in to attack the Aes Sedai and the Younglings.
Oh, no, you're totally right. That's right. No, I apologize. Say,
who's tainted, me or you?
Well, no, they then get attacked by Perrin and followers and the Aes Sedai, but no, 100%, they are attacking the Aes Sedai of the White Tower and the Younglings.
And with those totally numbers, correct. Like, yeah, how could they lose? Like, they weren't going to lose that battle. No way.
And then you have Perrin who shows up and he goes,
I'm gonna bite him in the ass.
This is my buddy Rand. I can't not go down there. And he's going down there, to quote Andrew, they're going down there to die. Like, they're literally going down there to die an honorable death. And things do not go well for anybody but the Shido until, for the even first the
Shido, time. It's not going well for them either. They just have more people.
It's like a meat grinder. It's a meat grinder.
They're Russia. They just have more bodies to throw.
I'm glad you said it before I did.
Jesus.
That's exactly what I was about to say. Like, they're just using Russian tactics.
Yeah.
Like World War II Russia.
Right. Yeah. And it's worked for them in the past, right? They've always had overwhelming numbers. They do have a more capable and more skilled force than
that most. Is correct.
But it is just
this is where I will actually, I'm not a Shido apologist, but I am a little bit of a youngling apologist here for a moment, because according to the thing, all the Shido are supposed to be dope ass warriors, and they are. I'm not trying to say that they aren't, but the younglings are holding their goddamn own.
It's true. They do
against these Shido warriors. And again, I will never, ever, ever once say that Gawain did the right thing or that he's ever more than just a shit ass character. But his younglings are actually dope in this battle. Well,
and I will give props to Gawain in this particular scenario. The only time that we see him shine is in these battlefield scenarios.
Yep.
100%. In these battlefield scenarios until Tarmin guided.
Yes.
It's almost like he was raised to do one thing and one thing only. And he's Pete put Randall into
Thor.
Yes, that's exactly obviously. No, but
that is answer one. But answer one A is
exactly. But
is protect his sister at all costs and be really good at fighting. Yep.
I mean, 100%. But yeah. So you get the scenario in which they're all just killing the shit out of each other, which is literally just what they're doing. They're all just killing the shit out of each other. And when the day seems lost, when the Shido are closing in and things are just not going well for them at all, for the defenders, a gateway opens up.
On your left.
On your left. And for the first time in 3,000 years, men who can wield Sidene show
save
up
and single-handedly day.
Save the day. Single-handedly.
For everyone except the Shido.
Well, they show up, they put up a big old shield similar to episode one. They have Gungan shields. And they're like, okay, cool.
Oh, and some of their friendly forces. Because there are friendly forces that are caught in the onslaught. Because Perrin is pleading to Rand to have them raise the dome. It's like, we've got loyal. We've got the L word forces out there. We need to let them
in. Yeah, friendlies.
Lion face. Lemon face.
And I'm pretty sure Rand's like, huh, raise the dome. That's a good idea. Hey, Taim.
Do it. Well, and again, that's what you get. You get this. I cannot wait to see this in the television show, because for me, reading this book and knowing
I was literally in my head about to ask you whether you think that we're going to get this in the television show. And then I was like, wait,
if we don't get to, if they didn't,
I mean, I would kill a man. Like,
that's where one of the best phrases come from.
I know, right?
Kill.
Followed by the second best phrase, kneel or you will be knelt.
Yes. Ugh. But continue your statement, Josh. Sorry, you were.
So.
Can't wait to see it in the television show.
I can't wait to see it in the television show, because at this point in time, Taim has promised Rand a force that will match the White Tower and exceed the White Tower. Mm-hmm. Now he shows up with, I think it's only like 100 soldiers and dedicated, and a handful of Ashaman.
Something like that.
Andrew's the numbers guy.
I believe it's around 200.
So 200 men who can channel. And they, he just pops in. He's like, okay, Ashaman form ranks. Boom, boom, choom, 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 choom. And then they're like, you know, create a perimeter. Boom, 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 boom. They do this. And I want to see
that. The precision.
Military yeah, about precision. I want to see that military precision. And I want Taim to show up. And I want him to be smug as fuck. Because not only is he saving Rand's life, but he's showing the effectiveness of what he's been doing at the Black Tower. And he deserves to be smug at this point in time.
Well, imagine what it looks like for the Aes Sedai, who are like, yeah, if you're doing this, you need to move your hands around. And the Ashaman are just standing there.
Standing at,
like,
there.
Whatever Randland's version or the Black Tower's version of attention is. Not really moving. And they're just people. They're just not being people anymore.
No, yeah, right.
One second. He was there a second misted. Ago. I don't know where he went.
they're getting pink misted.
So, cool. Okay. So here's one thing that
I know it's been since like, you know what, 69, but too soon.
Okay. Sorry.
Here's one thing that I will say about Dumai's Wells. I don't know if I've ever actually mentioned this before. Probably I have. Because we've talked about Dumai's Wells a number of times.
So much.
One of the things that I actually like about Dumai's Wells, which is one thing that I like about many battles in the Wheel of Time, which is, of course, our topic, is that you never know. You never know what's going to happen next. You never know what would have happened if what happens next doesn't happen. And you're never quite sure what's exactly going on at every instance. Like, for example, sorry, I shouldn't actually say that. Sometimes it does actually make it really clear what would have happened if X didn't happen, but most of the time it leaves it a mystery. Like, for example, Dumai's Wells. You have the Ashaman show up. You also have Rand, one of, if not the absolute most powerful channeler alive today, frees himself from the Aes Sedai minutes before the Ashaman show up. Would Rand have been able to just decimate the fucking Shido and just take everybody out? Maybe. Who goddamn knows? We don't get the opportunity to see Rand just go off on Samael because the Ashaman show up instead. And again, I'm not saying that I'm like sitting here being like, oh, the Ashaman didn't need to be there. No, it was epic and they absolutely fucking needed to be there. Be there.
Probably a really good thing we didn't. Because the Rand that comes out of the box is Darth Rand.
Yeah.
It is. And if we thought Natrum's burrow was bad, could you imagine the effects of Rand bail firing 40,000 threads out of the pattern in an instant?
Well, and also, again, we also, is it right after or right before? No, it's right after, maybe not right after, soon-ish after that we see him call down lightning on the Shanshan and take out a number of his own forces too. So, like, let's be honest, it's not even very, very long after that we see Darth Rand go, you know what's nice? Death and mass. So, like, we probably don't want to see Rand try and take the Shido out there. But at the same time, we never get the chance. It's an interesting thing where, my personal opinion on battles in the Wheel of Time, and one of the reasons that they're so dynamic to me, is so many things happen and you get so many questions and you get so many mysteries of what would have happened, what can happen, what will happen, what is happening, like all of these different things. And, you know, as I said, on the very, very rare occasion you do actually get, you know, Rodel Iduralde being like, all of my forces are going to die and I'm going to be dead in 87 seconds, and then 20 seconds into that, Rand shows up and you're like, no, you would have been dead. You like, that's on 100% guarantee, but you didn't. But most of the time when you're reading a battle in the Wheel of Time, I appreciate the fact that it's always
it's almost always left as a mystery. What would have happened if this hadn't? What would have happened if that hadn't? What would have happened if, you know, would they have won if Matt hadn't showed up? Would they have won if Rand hadn't showed up? Would they have, you know, what is going on here and how badly are they losing versus how badly are they winning? And then, of course, this new variable enters and it changes everything.
I love that you're not directly quoting, but you're essentially discoursing on what Matt has said about battles.
Mm-hmm.
Everything always changes. Everything the best plan lasts until the first arrow leaves the bow.
Yeah, and we know that is Murphy's Law.
Yep.
All bets are off, my guy. Yep. Because you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know how many of your soldiers are going to shit themselves. You don't know how many of your soldiers are going to not stick to the plan. You don't know how many of their soldiers are going to just be better or worse or whatever the case may be. And so you have, I mean, you even see that with Elaine later on in the books where she's hired mercenaries, and mercenaries will leave other mercenaries alive on the battlefield as a professional courtesy.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, excuse me, what the hell are you doing? And they're like, they're mercenaries. We're like, we're cut from the same cloth. I mean, we wouldn't want them doing that to us.
Just because they are a bad guy does not mean they are a bad guy.
And I love Elaine. I also love totally badass here when she's like, I pay you to kill them. You will kill them.
Well, I also love one of them even kind of says, if we leave them alive, you can pay them later. Isn't that like a line that one of them says, like in defense of their actions?
Yes.
And I love that in some ways is like,
it makes work sense
for money. Yeah. If I kill their loyal soldiers, but leave the mercenaries alive, that's just more people for your army that you can pay later. And you're like,
you know,
oh my God, I haven't thought of it like that before.
You know, what he who comes with the wine just said in the live chat, I would love for Mad Dog Mattis to be somewhere in the back of Matt's mind. And if you disagree with that, I'm going to encourage you to be very careful.
You know who else has to be there then?
No. I was
going to say has to be there.
I was going to say that Mattis learned it from Matt, not the other way around. That's what I was going to say.
Oh yeah, but I would still love Mattis's experience to be in Matt's head, and like some random part of the back of his head is like, I really wish I had a Moab right now.
Well, and of course, again, I think that Matt is one of the reasons that we love Matt. And one of the reasons that he's so good at battles is that he literally walks around in battle with Mad Dog. He's got Patton. He's got fucking, General Grant and General Lee and also General Sherman. Like, he's got every fucking general that you've ever had.
Yes. Probably got old Stonewall in there, too.
Right, a little bit of Stonewall, yeah. No, he's got every single general.
Which is why he's so cautious about friendly fire.
So
you know what sucks worse than getting shot with a smoothbore musket? Surviving the shot to die of fucking pneumonia.
Yep.
I mean, by all means, like, you know, it was probably for the better, to be honest with you. But still, like, that's a sucky way to die. Like,
I
survived the gunshot.
It is.
I hear
but, no, and, so, and regardless think, of bad people, we don't ever
Alexander
want
the Great,
to die
Julius
horribly. Yeah, no, I mean, like, again, every general that you've
Genghis
ever
Khan,
heard of,
Kublai
Genghis
Khan.
Khan.
Yeah, like,
the stories of Gilgamesh are just
Hun,
stories of Matt.
Like, fucking. Yep.
I love that we've veered into Matt, because you can't have an episode of Battles and not talk about Matt. And frankly, any other platform would be talking about Matt this whole time, but, you know, we got a hard on for Demise Wells, so, you know, go away.
Dude, I'm always hard.
It was our debut, and boy, did we leave an imprint. A nice, big, soggy red imprint.
Big dick print from the big black tower.
The bigger, blacker.
Is that the Shido? Mushroom stamp their forehead. What?
The biggest, blackest them. Tower.
It definitely left a mark. so here's the deal. So, What are the true beautiful things that I love about Matt is how much he complains about how little fighting the Band of the Rand Hand does, how much money it costs to pay them and train them. So he starts talking about, he's complaining about how expensive it is to continually have to buy new arrows because he wants his people drilling with those crossbows. And he wants that military precision. He wants that. He wants them, when they start getting up on those crossbows, he wants them to not think about it anymore. It's muscle memory. He wants them to just boom, chum, boom, chum, boom, and just go into town.
Do.
And they do, because he spends hours every day making sure that not only does he have the best trained force, but he has the most prepared force. Yeah. And that's one of the things that set, you know, different aspects of the U.S. military apart, is that,
and again, Jamie's on point, sweat more, bleed less.
Exactly. It's, and so Matt actually makes a comparison. He talks about how the cost of keeping a military force up to snuff or superior in a lot of ways
is so expensive,
but he's not willing to sacrifice the coin it takes to make sure that his guys live to see another day.
And well, because he's responsible for them.
Exactly.
And what a lot of people realize, responsible for them.
And what a lot of people don't realize is that the battle is fought every single day on the training field, hours and hours and hours and hours and hours before you ever take the life of another soldier.
Now, again,
a fun fact about real life.
I
understood the difference between cover and concealment, but what really drove home the lesson was thinking I was behind cover when it was actually partial concealment and catching a sim round to the dick. It's a really good way to learn distinctions about what will and will not protect you. If it won't protect you from a sim round, it's not protecting you from anything else.
Yep. Well, and of course, this is one of the things that I love about Matt. And Mazrim Taim is the fact that I feel like those two guys legitimately understand both aspects of fighting. Actually, I take that back. I think that Matt understands both aspects of fighting. Mazrim Taim understands the first one and disregards the second one and whatever. But anyway, Matt, as we've already talked about, goes, every day we're going to drill crossbows. Every day we're going to drill spears. Every day we're going to drill X, Y, and Z. Your time is going to be spent mastering what you're actually going to need when we start the battle. Then the battle starts, first arrows fired, all shit goes to hell. And he goes, cool, so what do we have to do now? Because I've given you the skills to survive every day since we got to this point, but I still also need to give you the strategy to survive as it changes. Taim, I feel, very much has the same idea of training happens every day. We train for the battle. We train for Tarmon Gaiden every single day at the Black Tower. And we do everything with the One Power. We do everything with Sidene. We do everything with, we train every day with throwing fireballs without going ahead and throwing our hands. We train every day with making the ground explode. We train every day with making people, you know, that rock explode, which represents somebody's head. Now, I definitely think that he does less when he actually gets into the battle of like, oh, shit, everything went wrong. We need to figure out how to go ahead and survive. He's just like, some of you will die, and that is a risk I'm willing to take.
There's something I thought about. Go ahead.
Sorry. Demise Wells is a good example of that half-expected, half-unexpected battle. right? This is a good example of, you know, you're catching up. You know you're about to face them. You don't know exactly what you're about to face. And everybody is prepared, but also kind of caught off guard. So I have, there's two good examples. One we see in the books and one we hear about in the books that I think demonstrate the other ends of battles. And I would like us to shift gears into the ambush battle, the fully unexpected by one side battle. And I can think of no better example than the Battle of Tar Valon, when the Shan Chan launch a raid against Tar Valon. Because, you know, obviously the Ashaman crushed it. You know, fighting off 40,000 Shido Hael is one thing.
But they knew what they were walking into.
Yeah. And so, like, even in training, or at least the first couple of times going through training, there's a whole new pucker, oh shit factor when you're just standing around watching. It's been like 8 hours. You're bored as fuck. You've pissed in the same hole six times because they told you, don't you dare leave. And then suddenly shit pops off. Things start exploding. The ground starts shaking. The buildings start shaking. And this is what happens in 1008 at the White Tower while Egwene is held captive and has swayed a lot of the White Tower to her side. But this is like Egwene's defining moment in showing the White Tower itself. Like, no. You think Elida is an Ommerlin? Let me show you an Ommerlin. Hey, Igor, hand me my rod. Because this is a full ambush battle. Where the Shan Chan, they knew.
Why does Igor have your rod?
I don't know.
Igor always has your rod.
Yes, master.
You don't have an Igor?
Sorry.
Well, I mean,
find an Igor right now and give him your rod.
So I was rewatching like our YouTube trailer again, and I forgot about the thing where like I was like, Starscream is just a budget Igor. but yeah, so you have this whole battle where the Shan Chan, they know, they've scouted out, they know the forces they're facing. They're familiar with dealing with opposing force channelers. They know when they're attacking, they know where they're attacking, and they have done this shit so many times, they have it down to a fucking pinprick science. And the only thing that throws any kind of wrench in their plans and still doesn't even result in a total defeat for them, just makes them back off, is Egwene. Where Egwene and the rest of the White Tower have no clue what's going on. And until Egwene steps up and is like, yeah, we kind of need to fucking do something.
And unforks herself, as Recapacidae has coined. I love that.
Oh, yeah.
Unforks herself?
Because she'd been dosed with fork root.
Yeah.
Oh, she, yeah.
And so on the spot, she links with a bunch of accepted. She's like, listen here, you're in the shit now. I don't give a shit
what your
rank and station is. This is how you link. Do it right now. Give me the thing. And she's able to channel through them, even though
she doesn't unfork herself at all. Fuck. She just grabs onto some other strands.
Semantics. You and your
unforks herself makes me think of The Good Place. So shut your mouth and
wait. So, like, here's one of the things. Like, as much as you may love or hate the Shan Chan, whatever, it doesn't matter. When it comes to executing, planning and executing battle tactics, the Shan Chan are like, they're, if they're not number one, they're number two. Because they have the experience. And they coordinate this attack where they're going to have Damane on the back of Tel'Rakan flying around, blasting holes in the side of the White Tower so that they can insert forces up at above ground levels.
That's essentially them coming in with airstrikes and dropping in Halo special forces.
Yeah. It's like you it's guys bunker buster that. Bombs followed by paratroopers.
They're literally
air
superiority.
It'll bust the bunker underneath the bunker you want to bust.
All right, Tony.
All right.
But it's honestly, like, as much as the Seanchan have the biggest a glaring aspect
ever given me in the world,
yeah, as much of a glaring blot on the Seanchan as there is with the whole like we put people in slavery thing. When it comes to military prowess, the Seanchan are hands down fucking impressive. Yes. And I think some of that is to drive home just how effective the armies of Otter Hawkwing are, because they're not doing stuff that is completely new. There may be a new twist on some old ideas, but these are, well, minus the Chandlers, these are the tactics of Otter
even Hawkwing. Then. Yeah.
Yes, I mean, even exactly. Then, probably, yeah. So...
It's interesting too. It's interesting too to see that the greatest tacticians, the greatest tactical minds in the Wheel of Time spend their time preserving the lives of their own soldiers, which I think is an important distinction to make. Matt's first hand at leading a force. A segment of soldiers is him basically trying to keep them out of trouble. The first time we're introduced, well, you know what I mean.
It's trying to keep himself out of trouble, and he just keeps collecting people.
He sees people going over the ridge, and he's like, there are people over the ridge that will kill the fuck out of you. You need to come with me now. Yes. Uh-huh. Oh, yes, we're going this way.
Yeah.
Away from the bullets. No,
as I said, he keeps on trying to keep himself out and keeps on like grabbing people on his way to
the safe zone. We're on Egwene.
No, I know. hold on. I'm going there with this. The first
time. Well, if you're gonna come. God, I'm tired of waiting.
Stop edging, Andrew.
That's what she said.
I've never heard that in my life.
The first time.
Stop edging Andrew?
No. I mean, well, yeah, but...
The first time we are introduced to Rodel Idaralde is when he has a plan to slap the Seanchan in the face and draw them out of the city with a low attrition rate. He wants to do the maximum amount of damage to them and the least amount of damage to him. And so he essentially sends his forces that way. It's run away. But we're not going to call it run away. We're going to call it tactical retreat to draw them out. And then he skirmishes with them to
rob Marine Corps
for a low attrition battle. Egwene
I'm sorry. I couldn't resist.
Egwene doesn't have the option of having a low attrition battle, but what she does have the option is shoring up her position, strengthening her position. And so she's got a full circle of granted, accepted, and novice women who can channel.
I think they're predominantly
novices. She's also got Vora's Sangreal in her hand. And she is at the top of the White Tower channeling like nobody's ever seen it. And in that moment,
still on the 22nd floor,
wins the respect of the Green Aja, because they're like, shit, we got caught with our pants down, guys. There's one person doing damage against these guys. The rest of us are playing defense right now. The rest of us are trying our best to come together
to not
and
die
and to not die. We're surviving. She's up there with the light of like Vora Sangreal, and she's killing it.
Well, literally. And okay, think about it. So What is part of the reason why she pushes so much for the link? What does she see and what does she know about linking? She sees Aes Sedai being shielded and carted off, and she knows that in a link, it is nigh impossible to shield.
Exactly.
And she's like, cool, I'm doing that. And this is where we also, it's not where we meet, but we see a very much like to Egwene nod from Adelorna, who at this point is the Green Aja's general or captain general.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
And she's like, yeah.
So anytime you want to just put an application to go ahead and be in the Green Aja, we will accept.
No, you know what? Just write your name on a green piece of paper and leave it anywhere in the tower. You're good.
Literally anywhere. We got you.
Okay. I would, but I'm the Omerlin, so
you're right. In.
So okay, there is one thing that I will say about this, because again, McGirl Egwene, our girl Egwene, is awesome. I never want to take anything away from Egwene. Egwene is dope. It is also a little weird when we talk about like the linking with the novices, because everybody else is like, oh my God, she like links with novices and accepted. And it's like, it's so weird. And it's so and you're like, yeah, but she's the one directing the flows.
She got it.
She is dope as shit. And so again, it's one of those things where in Saladhar, they do this as well. They actually have
yes,
very powerful Aes Sedai walking around. Or at least very strategic and capable Aes Sedai walking around. And then they're linked with a number of other people who don't have any idea what the fuck they're doing. And that's okay. That's actually one of the things that I think people gloss over in some ways with the linking is, if you have one person who's like, it's like having Michael Jordan be the only player on the team going up against one other or many other people, but he also has the backing and the strength and the skill of
yes,
Scottie Pippen and Dennis Rodman and, yes, you know, a number of other players, because
the Bulls dream team, baby.
Right. Because it doesn't actually matter that fucking Katie over here, who's a novice and has been in the White Tower for like 8 days, but is like a strong enough channeler, doesn't have any goddamn idea how to do a weave to save her life.
Well,
as long as she can link into the link with Egwene, Egwene can just use her power and not give a fuck that Katie doesn't know how to do anything.
Well, and one of the few things that we know about, so channeling is like one of those things that's kind of vague and ambiguous. There's not really a good quantification for, I can channel X times 5. Well, I can channel X times 7. So therefore, what we're told is that they can kind of sense who's able to channel more. And we've already had confirmation that in the TV show, the mechanics have changed. So that's not necessarily the case in the TV show. But what we know...
How they sense. Okay, I got
it. Yeah, it's how they sense other people who
can Sarah tell. Confirmed in a tweet that they can only sense another female channeler when they're actively embracing the source.
Yeah.
Not whenever they're just standing around.
So we don't know what else has changed about the
mechanics. No more OP power sense.
But what we do know is that in the books, when Egwene links with when she gets a full circle, that ability to channel is increased. I don't want to say at an exponential manner, but
it's
it's
logarithmic.
Well, it's thank you. That is a much better
word. That's a fancy word. Well, I got a South Carolina public education. What the hell does that mean?
It actually means that it's less than linear. When you actually look with something,
so it doesn't just add one and one, it's like 1 + 0.8.
Yes, exactly. But, and so it's logarithmic, where you get a lot more powerful and you can link with a lot of people. And so again, one person who's good running around with 8.0 power, even though they're linked with 13 like channelers, that's still amazeballs. Also, when you consider the fact that it is according to the rules and what
we better name the disco balls, Saladhar, amaze balls,
I like
it, is that it evenly distributes the fatigue among everyone as well. And so that is actually one of the coolest things, is that your best channeler can throw their best shit at whoever is coming at you, and everyone's going to feel it at the same rate. So the one person who's amazing doesn't kill themselves while one, you know, a number of other people are like, meh, whatever. Like, no, it's even distribution of fatigue while it's not quite even distribution of power.
It's a very synergistic relationship while you're within that link. And what we do know is that in scenarios with a full circle, what that does is it makes it A, nigh impossible to shield anyone who is embracing the source with a full circle, and B, a full circle of women embracing the source can easily shield a man who can channel.
Yeah, 100%.
They can easily do a lot of things that a person by themselves could not. So when you start talking about battles, and I love that you brought in Saladar, because Egwene was in Saladar when the bubbles of evil were attacking. And Aes Sedai and Saladar, what did they do? They said, okay, novice and accepted, you are going to learn how to link right now. Because what's going to happen is we're going to have full circles, and we are going to utilize full circles when these bubbles of evil appear so that we can mitigate any damage as quickly as possible. That is a practice that had not been done in the White Tower. Saladar did it out of necessity.
Because they thought they were going to be attacked by the Forsaken. Exactly. And that is a shitty ass thing to think.
So, but they trained for it. Again, the point I'm making here is they trained for it. They actively taught their younger channelers, this is how you do it. This is what you do. This is how you need to perform. And so when Egwene was under attack, for her, it was, I'm going to say this, and you guys are going to call me out, but you're going to understand my point. It was no different facing the Seanchan than it was a bubble of evil in terms of surprise, because they just showed up out of nowhere. Yeah. And then, but the thing that I would say you would disagree with is that the Seanchan, I think Egwene would have a much more emotional response.
I don't disagree with that. And of course, it would be a lot more difficult, because when Egwene was in Saladar, she was actually part of a linked circle, and everybody else in the circle knew how to do it. And she actually, in the White Tower, needs to be the head of and teach a number of people on the fly how to do it. So it is infinitely more difficult when she faces the Seanchan than the bubbles of evil. But I like what you're bringing up there, as the Matt trains his forces every day with the crossbow. Mazrim trains his forces every day with the, you know, with the power. Egwene has been training in Saladar for months. This particular tactic, the rapid link response. Yes, and I agree with that completely. And I like the grab back of a lot of the most successful people. A lot of the most successful people and a lot of the most successful battles in the Wheel of Time are built on practice. Yes. They're built on practice. Weird.
It's almost like practicing combat readiness is an effective strategy employed by militaries.
Almost. It's also almost like Robert Jordan had military experience and knew it.
What?
No. All right. You shut your whole mouth, Daniel.
If Demise Walls is a good example of the middle ground, and the Battle of Tarvalon is a good example of a battle that results from a reaction to an ambush, let's go the exact opposite side. A battle that was known to be coming by all sides.
Oh, by all sides.
By all sides. Both opposing factions knew the battle was coming and were preparing for it and moving out to meet on the battlefield. Think, I don't know, every cinematic Lord of the Rings battle almost.
The Battle of the Five Armies.
Well, where I'm pulling this, do you remember the actual name for the last stand battle at Manetherin?
Isn't it called Manetherin's Last Stand?
I was about to say.
Nope. I mean,
or is it the Battle of the Manetherendrel or something?
Close. It is the Battle of the Tarandrel River.
Ah, okay. Yes, okay. Yeah.
And that is a battle where the Shadow knew the Manetherin would stand ready, Manethrin knew the shadow was coming.
They knew the shadow was coming. That's true. Yeah, absolutely.
So this is a fully both sides, though not equal sides, are prepared. And it's all, I mean, obviously, the story of Manethrin is heartbreaking because it is like, so Demise Wells is a triumphant story where the good guys win. And the Battle of Tar Valon is a little bit more 50-50 because the Shan-Chan don't suffer a ton of casualties, only about like 30 Tel'Rakan that actually get destroyed. A little bit less members of the Aes Sedai that actually die.
To be fair, Demise Wells is where, you know, the good guys kind of win, but in the end, the Shido aren't decimated. They do go on to do other dumb fucking annoying
shit.
They do
tactically and retreat because,
as we said before, as much as I don't want to bring it up again because it is sort of a blot on their record in some ways, Taim doesn't give a fuck about friendly fire, and there are some good guys that get trapped in that meat grinder as well. So again, in the end, it is a triumphant story. I agree with you, but war is hell, so there isn't actually triumph. There's only, we came out of this better than we thought, and they came out worse than we thought.
So to bring that to real life, there's a lot more friendly fire that happens in actual modern wars than you will generally ever see publicized, because nobody wants to publish a story about American troops accidentally engaging British or Canadian troops or vice versa.
Or having people still in the line of fire of a drone strike, or
intel is everything on the battlefield. Oh, yeah.
You know, like,
and which is a thing we see in the Wheel of Time. Yeah, no, intel is everything. Go ahead, Andrew. Sorry.
Yeah, but the Battle of Tarindale River is one of the stories. It is kind of a story of what you think of as a kind of classical fantasy kind of battle. This just ends with, you know, the quote-unquote good guys not winning. But both sides were prepared.
That one's, like, definitively the good guys.
It's the tragedy. Weep for me. It really is.
Now, granted, again, this is one of the moments where I will let you finish, I promise, Andrew, in just a moment. But it is one of the interesting things where it is one of the most sad yet triumphant yet whatever stories, because in the end, the good guys lose according to the story. I would love, I mean, like, we're never going to get it, and Robert Jordan didn't actually ever write the battle and things like that, but I would love, if you will, to pick Robert Jordan's brain for a moment about, hey, we all know the story of Manetherin. Moraine tells the story of Manetherin. How do you actually see the battle going? How much shit, how much war is hell, how much friendly fire, how much all of this different stuff do you actually see in this battle? Because I think that would be really interesting, because again, it's a Demise Wells. In terms of the fact that it's a meat grinder, it's horrifying. It's absolutely horrible. Is it actually just one side versus the other and there's just so much fucking death? Or do you see it a little bit? Like, I would love to hear Robert Jordan describe the battle, not from Moraine telling the story in the Eye of the World, but from his, like, tell me about the battle. Just tell me
what
occurs.
I would think that, and again, I want to be very clear here, I am not putting words in the mouth of Robert Jordan. I would never ever claim to understand what he was saying or what he was thinking, but for my perspective and for my understanding, the Battle of Manetherin does equate to and is similar to the Battle of Thermopylae, which we know from the movie 300. When the graphic novel, the
sensationalized movie 300,
It was incredibly sick. Guys, there were not 300 Spartans there. Okay, there were thousands of other Greeks there as well. There were only likely 300 Spartan knights, but they also had their serfs and their servants who were also fighting. There were likely thousands of people at the hot gates. The point being, they held out
as long as they
could. Thousands of people in your hot gates.
Because I'm a slut. Wait, what? Okay, sorry. What response hold on.
I was expecting, but that was definitely not it.
It takes 300 to fill that gap. Yes, Ashiman.
Can I just comes say, with the wine. If Josh doesn't already have the roll, we need to give him the triple broken crown because that broke
all right.
everyone.
All right.
I'm pretty sure all of us have actually broken the other two and also made ourselves laugh, but still.
I broke Marshadi. I broke Marshadi on that one.
Nice.
Oh, shit. I got all of us with the more robots in our throat than Monda Maximal. Yes.
Yeah, you got us. You got us good with that one. And we got video evidence of that one.
I'm 99.9% sure I've gotten all three of us before. But again, if Josh hadn't before, I did it now.
So the Battle of Thermopylae, what are they fighting for? They were fighting to preserve their homeland, but also to buy time. To buy time for people to prepare food and provisions, to prepare survival locations and hidden locations and bunkers, to provide a defense strategy to try, once again, to try and stop the progression of an invading force. In this particular case, you know, Thermopylae was one of several battles that was fought in conjunction with that. There was also a naval battle that was fought. There was a lot that was done. And then later on, there was the Battle of Plataea, which is, again, all of these were a linked series of events that led to a force of few standing against a force of many to defend their homelands. And what do we know about Thermopylae? They ultimately failed.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, they were overrun and killed to the last man.
They didn't, though. They succeeded in their mission. They failed at living.
Okay, that's fair to say. No, you're absolutely right. They 100% succeeded in living and in
just their mission.
A mental warfare against the invading foe as well.
Yep.
That is an accurate statement.
Listen, it's an epic example of psychological warfare.
Oh, hey, yeah.
We understand you want to take our lands, but we have killed enough of your men and you don't see any bodies of ours because we're creating the illusion that none of our people die, that we literally built a fucking wall of corpses out of your dudes. That's hardcore. That's like medieval using the trebuchet to launch severed heads into cities to help destroy morale and spread disease.
Sorry, let me actually help you there.
I swear to God, if you correct me to catapult, I swear to God.
What I was going to say was, we've killed enough of your men. So put a wall of corpse. Sorry, I just had to get my Gerard Butler in there.
That's fair enough. So everybody loves numbers. I have numbers for the forces at the last stand of Manethrin.
Fuck yes.
So on the Trolloc side, you have thousands of ravens.
In this corner, in the blue corner, weighing in at how many fucking Trollocs?
Yeah. So thousands of ravens serving as airborne recon, between 10 to 15 dreadlords, 700 human dark friend company commanders, 7,000 Murdral fist commanders. That's 7,000 fucking Murdral. 100,000 Trolloc archers and 600,000 Trollocs. I'm not really that great at math, but that's like 710,000. Could you imagine a battle of 710,000 people on that the forces of the light in the opposing corner?
In the red corner, weighing in at however many Manetherans.
You have King Aemon.
Yep.
500 elite troops represented by the Band of the Red Hand, the original one, or, you know, the previous age one, whatever. 5,000 cavalry troops represented by the Heart Guard. 10,000 archers. Literally a, what is that, like a tenth? That's a tenth of their opposing military. And again, in a tenth, 60,000 veteran troops, veteran infantry, only to be bolstered later by 50,000 late arriving civilians with minimal combat experience.
Yes.
So like, at that point, we're talking
50,000?
Just
we're talking about 10,000 of them wielding fucking frying pans. Like, this is get like, the fuck out of here.
It's just over 100,000 or so troops all in total by the end of things.
We're talking
just over 100,000.
Minimum 7-1.
Yes.
Yeah. 7-1 ratio.
Probably more like 8-1 if we're,
you know, and 50, I mean, if you account for like differences, I would go as much as to say 4-1 ratios. Because the 50,000 that come in later to bolster have minimal to no combat experience.
Oh, that's why I was saying, you know, at least 8-1. Because you're talking about civilians coming in and they bolster.
Oh, yeah, I went the wrong way with the ratio. My bad.
Yeah, you're good. But Jesus. Fuck.
Could you imagine looking out on the horizon and seeing over 700,000 troops bearing down on you?
Well, and again, some fucking Morshadi put in the chat something also kind of important. Trollocs are not well trained. They're not. And honestly, if
they
are
actually bred for combat.
Well, that's what I was gonna say. Is that if you put one human versus one Trolloc, as far as intelligence and tactics, the human has it all over the Trolloc, because the Trollocs are not bred to be intelligent. They're not bred to be tactical. They're not bred to be good at just about anything except for strength. And just war. And
endurance.
Strength and endurance and war. And that's
what they do. They have proficiency in their strength and con saving throws.
Yeah, 100%. And so again, you're looking at maybe the veteran soldiers, maybe at best, the veteran soldiers are a match for the Trollocs because they're less strong, but they're smarter. But then you bring in the civilians. Trollocs are just twice as strong civilians. That's what they are. That's absolutely what they are. Let's use a show's
perspective. So how many Trollocs does Perrin take down? 50,000
civilians? Like,
let's use the show as a good example.
25,000 Trollocs.
How many Trollocs does Perrin take down before, you know, he takes down the last? Oh, wait, no, sorry. That wasn't a Trolloc. So that's like 2-1-ish ratio from an untrained but still, you know, fit kind of person.
Yes.
So I would say
it takes like somebody that is fit to take out one Trolloc when Deus Conger does her epic like feast on this dickwad. Like,
so that might even out to like, you know, around a 1-1 or slightly under a 1-1 ratio with favorite going to the Trollocs. But you take the veterans and it's probably closer to like one veteran taking out 3-4 Trollocs.
Even still, I think that's high.
Tactics triumph over like brute strength and endurance a lot, because they survived 13 days.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but that's it's the Wheel of Time, Hanukkah. It's not because they were.
I think Manetheran veteran troops could have taken like at least 3-4-1.
So here's the thing.
Fair enough. I mean, they would have been exhausted for sure, but
and that's what I was going to start with, as far as like, yes, tactics absolutely matter. But once you take out your second Trolloc, when you're on your third Trolloc, you're already tired and
getting a little stuffed.
Your efficacy also is diminished.
Now you also have to fight a Murdrawl as well. Like, you have to take out seven Trollocs and a Murdrawl for every single soldier at minimum. But if
you do take out a Murdrawl, you potentially take out a lot of Trollocs depending on how they're associated.
I hear what you're saying, and I appreciate the shit out of that particular statement.
I mean, it doesn't matter. They lost anyway, but I mean,
they were overrun.
As we've been talking about in live chat, it was a Fryic victory.
Because when Netherin people lived on. Talmadas is amazing. You can go away.
Talmadas did it. Fades. No problem. No, the important thing to remember, there's two very important things to remember, is that one, a battle, for the most part, is won or lost in the weeks and months beforehand of how well trained your force is, how well prepared and how well outfitted your force is. Okay, number one, that's what any good military tactician should be doing, to give their people the best chance of survival and victory.
And whether Robert Jordan actually understood that to a deep foundational degree or not, he wrote it in the story, and that is true. I don't even have military experience. Both of these guys do. I don't. And I know that to be true, regardless of the fact that I've never been in the military whatsoever. Again, while the truth of the matter is your plan only exists as long as right up until the point where the first arrow is shot or the first, you know, charge is led or whatever. Fuck, does preparation make the difference on so many levels?
Which leads me to my second point about battles, is that everything changes, and there are some scenarios in which, guys, it doesn't matter how well you're prepared or how well trained or how well outfitted your unit is. you could be Mike Manethrin. Manethrin was mighty. The forces of Manethrin struck fear into the heart of the Dark One and the Shadowspawn, which is why they attacked in force. And Manethrin held out for as long as they did because they were prepared, because they were well-trained. But in the end, they were overrun. And it's a tragedy. It is the same tragedy of the Greek forces losing at the Battle of Thermopylae. But the impact that they made in the long run, I mean, fast forward 1,000 years later after the Trolloc Wars, and the Shadowspawn still remember the name of the Band of the Red Hand and the Red Eagle of Manethrin. And they still fear it.
Have you ever heard the tragedy of Aemon the Wise?
It's not a story Agenor would tell you.
Best translation ever.
Love it.
When it comes down to battles in the Wheel of Time, my final thoughts are that...
And we only talked about three. I'm sorry. It's your final thoughts, final thoughts.
No, I was going to go there, though. But it was like Robert Jordan wrote battles in such a way that we all are reading and wanting more. And it's because he did it in a way that is... Bear with me here for a second. He did it in his way that's realistic. Yes, I know his battles include magic and monsters and things like that, but the tactics are very much the same across the board. And he does a really great job of portraying the emotion of the commanders, the training and preparation of the successful commanders. You know, especially with highlighting a group of characters known as the five great captains, who are known for their battle prowess, who are known to keep their forces primed and ready to go at all times. And we see Davram Bashir, Daddy Davram, becoming the great captain of the Dragonsworn, the Legion of the Dragon. And it's largely due to, and that's what he had him doing out there every day, drilling and training and drilling and training and drilling and training, not knowing the outcome of the battle, knowing that there was no guarantee of victory. He still had them out there training and drilling and training and drilling. And Robert Jordan wrote battles in a really great way, because when the battles came, you had forces that had already trained and prepared for those battles. And I think that's a really unique perspective that we don't get in a lot of fantasy literature. And I'm going to close on that.
I like it. Andrew, what do you think? What are your finale thoughts?
Oh, man. I mean, so I really like the idea that we did here that we didn't plan on. And I might have just enforced it to happen, but who knows? I don't know. It was still fun either way. Of looking at a battle where both sides are fully prepared as much as they can be, mm-hmm. and seeing how the tactics kind of went and how that went. And of course, it's like a mythical story, you know, which is kind of tantamount to all of these last stand stories of the victors. The ultimate victors are generally these last stand stories that are of triumph. I mean, the enemy sides have the same stories. You know, there are German soldiers from World War II that tell about, you know, their last stand on the beaches of Normandy. And it's still an epic tale. They're just on the wrong side of history. And the same thing happens here. The main thing is, and I'm pulling a bit from, you know, military training, is the differences that combat can have, from these battles can have, whenever you know the rough size and time frame of your enemy arriving, to having a general idea but just happening upon your enemy, all the way to either surprising or being surprised by your enemy. And all three of those, and those are still very broad kind of spectrums to talk about when it comes to battle, incorporate a bunch of different tactics and a bunch of different strategies. And again, you know, like Josh has said time and time again, I know Daniel has said it time and time again too, nothing ever lasts past first engagement. It everything changes whenever the first, you know, swords clash or whatever. But part of what makes the Wheel of Time battle so engaging and so believable is the fact that they are so dynamic. They are so diverse. There are so many different things that happen and so many different point of views that happen, where it's hard to not be invested in what's going to happen in a battle. Even if it's a story of a battle that happened, you know, ages and ages ago, it is still interesting to read. It still pulls in the reader, and it's one of the things I love. And Robert Jordan definitely understood it. You know, fighting in the wars that he did, or war, because he was in Vietnam, right? Yeah, he was a helicopter Korea. Gunner in Vietnam. Or was it Korea?
I thought it was Korea.
Oh, God. God, I do not remember this.
This up now.
Fuck. No. It was Nam.
Okay. It was Nam. Copy. Yeah. All right, cool.
So a situation I'm like Manetherin, I can definitely see Robert Jordan as a helicopter gunner looking at a situation where they're being overrun by the Viet Cong, and that being his later inspiration for, you know, the last stand of Manetherin. So, right. Yeah, I don't know. It's just really cool. And you'd be surprised how much information is actually out there about each of the named battles, much less every other battle. Like, go and read some of the information that's out there for them, and then go and reread the chapters where they happen or they're discussed, and you'll enjoy it.
Yes. Agreed.
What have you to say there, Danielle?
Not more than I've already said, probably. I think that the reason that I have always loved the battles in the Wheel of Time is that most of the time in television series, movies, books, I have found that more often than not, I know how the battle's going to end. It's telegraphed from the beginning. Usually you kind of know most of the variables, and in the end, most writers, not all and not in every case, but most writers that I have experienced telegraph where the battle is going to be and give you the variables beforehand. Let everything play out up until the point where it's going to go this way, and then add a variable. For example, you have a situation where, oh, these two armies are exactly evenly matched. They're fighting. Oh, one group has a little bit of extra. They end up going out and being a little extra. Okay, cool. Army X looks like they're going to win. Oh, wait, they actually are reinforced by, you know, neighboring country. Okay, well, now they're absolutely going to win the battle. And there's no question. Oh, wait, then this happens. And one of the reasons that I actually have always appreciated Robert Jordan is that he doesn't fully play out everything that he talks about. He introduces variables, let them play out for a certain amount of time, and then introduces a new one. And almost always, I am curious in my own head, which makes the battle more dynamic for me personally, and I imagine many other people. But what would have happened if we had seen that fully play out? Would Rand have won the battle had X not shown up? Would Rodel have won the battle if X hadn't showed up? Would Tar Valon have been completely decimated if Egwene hadn't gone ahead and done what she did? You know, there are many things that happen before you fully play out the situation. And it's the 11th hour. And that's actually, as I said, one of the reasons that I feel the battles in the Wheel of Time are extremely dynamic. Because there isn't a wait until the last minute to introduce the saving force. You do it when it feels right. He does it when it feels like it would actually happen. It always happens before you actually feel like it needs to. And I love that because, again, I have never truly been in a combat situation myself. But I feel like very rarely does it happen where right at the last second reinforcements arrive, or right at the last second does something change. I definitely, from what I've heard from people who've been in combat, from what I've heard from many histories of combat, from all of that different stuff, battle is constantly changing, and you rarely get the moment where, oh, everything's going to go to shit unless this happens. Oh, it happened? Great. Or, oh, it didn't happen? Great, then we're fucked. Like, it almost always happens before that moment. And that's why I think that I feel like the Wheel of Time battles are just so dynamic, is that Robert Jordan doesn't wait. Robert Jordan introduces those before it feels like they need to happen. And I love that mystery. I love that piece of the puzzle, because I am definitely for not waiting until you're about to put in the very last, you know, second on the bomb, the very last, you know, troop is destroyed, you know, all of that different stuff. And he even does that because there is like the Rodel Iteralde fight and things like that. It happens because, of course, again, that is also real life. We've all experienced the 11th hour save, but it's not most of the time. Most of the time, it's the 9th hour, the 10th hour, not the 11th. And I have always appreciated that about battles in the Wheel of Time.
Absolutely. Well,
I would agree.
Thank you, everyone, for being here. You know what time it is. It's time for us to wrap this up. We know you would love to listen to us. It's
actually time for us to wrap this up like 15 minutes ago. But we love you and wanted to give you extra content.
Just know that before the day is through, you should go to blacktarpod.com.
Do
you should go to crystalbarista.com. And you should go to thegreatblight.com. You should go to all three of them.
Also, and newcreationsbyjen.com.
And newcreationsbyjen.
And whatcon.com. No, just go to all the .coms. See what's out there on the internet.
Don't go to all the .coms. That's so many .coms.
But no, thank you for being here. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for tuning in and listening to us. Thank you for lining up for your weekly dose of madness. We hope that you're just a tiny bit more mad than you were when you first came here. Thank you so much for listening. And a super shout out to the Tweeter of Chaos. Thank you so much for including us in the watch party soiree that you guys throw every week.
The watch party.
Be sure to tune in to each content creator's watch party. It is never a disappointment. It is always super fun. And you know you're going to be exposed to some really great content creators that way. Thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you so much for being here. That's all I have to say. I'm just going to tell you right now. I have been Josh, your Sora Von Mihail.
And I don't have anything else to really say. So I guess
don't do it.
Like
don't
when you look at the overall scope of podcasts and the way that people sign out, I guess it's the point where like I say like my name and I've been so and so.
Yeah.
Say whatever you want to say.
Yeah.
That's pretty much it.
Say what you need to say. Say what you need to say.
Do what you want. Do what you want.
Do what you want. Yeah. What you want with my body. Do what you want.
So that we can wrap this up. Instead of making some shitty joke about so-and-so, I have been your Bajan Mihail, Andrew.
And we do want to give one last shout-out to all of our Patreons who joined this month. We do apologize for the length of time in which it took us to shout you out, but that's just how important you are to us. You guys are dope. We are super thankful for everyone who listens, to everyone who's a Patreon, and to everyone who contributes, whether it be our Discord, whether it be the Patreon, whether it be anything. We love you guys, and I know that we say that every week, but it's 100% true. The reason that we say it every week is not because it's a rote. It's not because it's routine. It is because we truly believe every word we say. But from all of us here at the Black Tower, I have been your Amon Khan Mihail, Daniel, and we thank you so much for being here, every single listener. And we hope that your morning is going amazing. And in case we don't see you again, good afternoon, good evening, good night.
So much trouble, just fitting in.